Welcome to WGIL Galesburg Live. Now, this week's host, Terry Cavanaugh.
Well, good morning. It's 7:16 here on Galesburg Live. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. Happy to welcome back to our studios this morning local historian Rex Charrington. Today, Rex and I will take a look at the early founding of Galesburg, or the founding of Galesburg, I should say. It was certainly early. Rex is going to take a look at it. I'll let him do the history here.
Good morning, Terry.
Good morning. It's great to have you back, Rex.
Oh, thanks, Terry.
Appreciate
it. Good to be here.
Yeah. Hey, before we get going, I know yesterday when I bumped into you, you were going to hear Lincoln Scholar Michael Burlingame at Knox, and how fortunate we are to have somebody of not only Rodney Davis and Doug Wilson's caliber here as Lincoln Scholars,
and
but
that they
Burlingame.
Established the Lincoln Studies Center here in Galesburg at Knox College. Quite an asset to the community.
Yeah, I suspect Burlingame was a good interview.
Good talk. Yes, an excellent talk, as always. They all give good talks. We're so fortunate. It brings so much talent to Galesburg.
Yeah, I would imagine that was wonderful yesterday. But when I talked to Rex a little bit ago, we were talking about the early history of Galesburg. The Reverend Gale of New York came here in 1834. And it's quite the story. I'll let you tell it, Rex, because
sure.
A lot was involved. I think he went from maybe not wanting to be a farmer into religious studies and becoming a pastor.
Yes. And actually, he didn't get here till 1836, but that's all right. We'll get to that. What I'd like to do today is talk about the religious and educational objectives of the founding of Galesburg. And always wonder, well, what point should I begin?
Yeah.
And I'm not going to start in Bethlehem in the stable, but I will start a little later on in Christian history at 1517 when Martin Luther authored the 95 Theses, and that was the beginning of the Protestant movement. The 95 Theses were objections he had to the Catholic Church. Could be called the 95 objections or 95 complaints, but the root word of Protestantism is protest, and that's really what it was a protest against the church. So a little bit later, not too much later, but in 1536, a man named John Calvin, and that's not how he actually pronounced or spelled his name. He was a French theologian. John Covan probably was the way he pronounced his name, authored the Institutes of the Christian Religion. And it had numerous ideas that were not in keeping with the Catholic Church and critical. And that's the name we'll focus on is Calvin, because the founders of Galesburg were Calvinists in their thinking. And John Calvin was ran out of France, settled in Switzerland, and his thinking caught on in Switzerland and in the Netherlands. We don't know his name as well as Luther because it didn't result in a church by his name. The Dutch Reformed Church is a Calvinistic church, and here in Galesburg, Presbyterians and Congregationalists grew out of that tradition. The way that that happened was that we also had a Protestant Reformation in England that was a little bit different because it was more political. It had to do with Henry VIII and not having a male heir and wanting more wives, and the church not agreeing with what he was doing, and so he created his own church. Then down the road, there were people who were not happy with the Church of England. They became dissenters. They became, the Puritans, we called them. And later, when they went to Holland, that's where they became more exposed to the ideas of John Calvin, became the Pilgrims when they came here in 1620. So that's kind of brings us up to where, in the tradition, and I won't go through all the different churches, but that gets us up to where we are in terms of the background of Galesburg. These people are the descendants of the Puritans.
So the early settlers were Calvinistic, Calvinists, I should say.
Let's put it this way. Yes, their background and upbringing was Calvinistic. I think some of them were starting to move away from it and question it. In fact, we know, of course, eventually here in Galesburg, we had a very strong Universalist movement, and they were really moving away from Calvinistic thinking, but the Congregationalists and Presbyterians were modifying and changing. There were new school and old school Presbyterians, and we don't want to paint with too broad of brush strokes. We want to acknowledge that within these constraints, not everyone was strictly just going by John Calvin, but John Calvin was the beginning of a movement that was adopted by the Puritans who became our pilgrims, and that's how it was brought to this country. Then we want to talk about the First Great Awakening in the 1730s, a largely Calvinistic movement, basically dissatisfaction that the churches were becoming too much about ritual and liturgy and not spiritual. So this awakening is to do with a spiritual awakening. The American Revolution came along, and then people became more secular-oriented, more interested in secular government. They were still going to their churches, but the enthusiasm of the First Great Awakening, it was wearing down due to the focus on the American Revolution. So after we get things settled and we become the United States of America, there's the Second Great Awakening. And that's where we want to, you know, start talking about the founders of Galesburg, because that comes out of the Second Great Awakening, which roughly runs from 1790 to 1850. The difference between, or well, I shouldn't say the difference, but what's a noticeable difference between the First Great Awakening and the Second Great Awakening is that in the First Great Awakening, it was pretty much strictly a church reform movement. In the Second Great Awakening, there's a social reform movement that they want to take Christian principles and apply them to in a more cultural way to society, to government, so that they become more interested in issues that might convert to the passage of laws. We call the blue laws sometimes, and these people were anti-drinking and so forth, and Sabbath keepers. They mm-hmm. wanted businesses closed on Sunday. And what we remember them mostly for today in the Galesburg group particularly is the anti-slavery aspect of it, that they were the most staunch anti-slavery abolitionists and Underground Railroad people.
Mm-hmm. Let me take a sure. quick break there, Rex, and because we're moving to a point now where we're going to get to the Reverend Gale and his philosophies. We'll take a quick break. We're with local historian Rex Cherrington on the early days and the founding of Galesburg. It's 7:23 on Galesburg Live. My guest this morning is Rex Cherrington. Rex is a local historian. We've talked in the past about Hope Cemetery. We've talked about horse racing here, but we've never sat down to talk about the early founding of Galesburg, which I think turns 180 next year, because I know the Library Foundation has a little sticker that yes. they're selling right now, that touting the, I think it would be in 2017, the 180th anniversary of, I think, the founding of Galesburg. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Actually, we could celebrate this year because the
Dutch
Oven came in 1836.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
to really.
Yeah, we're running out of time.
The people, there were some of the people were here, but they were not organized mm-hmm. until 1837. So the founding date does go track with the 1837.
Well, Rex was talking about the Reverend George Washington Gale and his influences before even coming to the prairie, much of them of a Calvinistic nature. And also he went down to, I think, some different universities. And
He did travel in the South. Just to give a little background on Reverend Gale, he was born in Dutchess County, New York, not far from the Hudson River. In 1789, not far from Poughkeepsie, where the Constitution was, the New York delegation ratified that New York would subscribe to the Constitution, become part of the United States. May have had something to do with him being named George Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Gale, her first president, was George Washington, of course. His parents died young. He was an orphan. He was raised by his older sisters and their husbands. Was often sent away to school. He was a rather sickly child, did what he could on the farm, but was not robust. It didn't look like he was going to make it as a farmer, so they kept him in school. He got a bachelor's degree from Union College in Schenectady, New York, then became an ordained Presbyterian minister, went on to get a doctorate from Princeton Theological Seminary. And I don't know, I'd love to know the numbers, but there could not have been very many people in the United States with doctorates at that time. And that early day, it was 1819 that he obtained a doctorate. So he would have been in a 1% group in terms of the education of the country. So,
but he became a Presbyterian.
Presbyterian, that's right. He was Presbyterian. And yes, and you mentioned that he took this trip. But due to his health, he was encouraged to go south. They thought it would be better for his health. And he had an opportunity to view some colleges, and among those was Jefferson's University of Virginia. Mostly liked what he saw, except for the fact that Thomas Jefferson wanted religious education separated from secular education, and Gale did not agree with that. So on coming back to New York, Gale decided that his ministry, rather than pastoring a congregation, he was better suited for education. And so he did co-found a school in Oneida, New York, with Reverend John Frost, the Oneida Institute. And that's not to be confused with Oneida Community, mm-hmm. that had free love and a lot of other things. These people were conservatives. It was at Oneida, New York. So this is part of that second Great Awakening, where mm-hmm. a whole lot of things are happening and people are experimenting with new social orders.
And Gale was, what did I read? That he liked revivals and those kind of
as long as they were his own.
Yes.
And he objected to Methodist, they called them camp meetings, and mm-hmm. things got a little too rowdy for Gale's taste.
Okay.
He did. I think you could be kicked out of Knox College if you went to one of those camp meetings.
Oh, okay. Because I thought I read where he wasn't so much preaching just maybe every Sunday, but like these revivals that he held.
Yeah, I don't know about that part of it. I know he objected to the Methodist camp meetings and didn't want the students to attend those.
They might have been a little more lively for his
taste. A little more
taste.
So. Yeah. I think overall we'd say Reverend Gale was a restrained man.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, in 1833 he gets the idea of coming to the West because, they're dealing with a lot of the influences in the East that he considers sinful, and he can do only so much, and he just feels like he can do better if he can get a group of people out here away from all those influences and set up a colony where they're not dealing with the influences of alcohol and, mm-hmm. and the secular, the drinking and everything. And
what they consider the sins,
the
of
sins,
the time.
The dancing, that's yeah. right, the card playing and mm-hmm. the gambling and even sports. I mean, sports were not part of Galesburg at first, not till the railroad came, so.
It's 7:36 here on Galesburg Live. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. Thanks for joining us early this morning. Coming up next hour, I just want to mention that we'll hear from Tom Meredith. He's out at the doggy jog this morning for the Knox County Humane Society, so he'll touch base with us a couple of times. And we're going to be talking about scams and how to prevent them. Detective Todd Olinger from the Galesburg Police Department will be our guest in the second half hour here this morning, so I hope you can join us for the information that he's providing. But it's history in this first hour as my guest, local historian Rex Charrington's here. We're talking about the Reverend George Gale of Oneida County, New York, who came to the prairie back in the 1830s and established Knox College. But the college and the community are intertwined. It's
yes.
like one or the other, one or the other, Rex. You can't really separate the founding of Galesburg from Knox College.
No, you could even argue that the founding of a community was incidental
to the
goal. One thing when we were on break, we talked about was Reverend Gale had the idea of a manual labor college, which he'd started in Oneida, New York. And that was because many aspired toward the ministry and wanted an education but could not afford it. So he came up with the idea with others that there could be colleges where people could work their way through school. And, of course, at that time that meant agriculture. And so when he drew up the text of the circular and plan for what was then called Prairie College when it was back east, before they actually got out here and knew where it would be located, it's very apparent. I'm not going to read all the circular and plan, but the circular tells us something about Reverend Gale and the plan. The circular begins by saying, "The indications of providence," which is capitalized, referring to God, "as well as the requisitions of Christ impose on Christians of this day peculiar obligations to devise and execute, as far as in them lies, liberal and efficient plans for spreading the gospel through the world. The supply of an evangelical and able ministry is, in the whole circle of means, confessedly the most important for the accomplishment of this end. All other means are the mere aids and implements for the living preacher." And I'm not going to go on any farther with that, but that is how the circular part of it outlines. So we'd call it probably a mission statement today. The plan says begins with, let a subscription be open for such institutions in some part of the valley to be fixed upon by a majority of the subscribers, and when $40,000 shall have been raised, let those who propose to settle in the vicinity of the institutions meet and elect a board of trustees who shall have the charge of all the funds. And I'm not going to go on reading all that, but it specifies what kind of a tract of land, how much land he wants. He wanted to actually get a whole township, which he was not able to obtain a whole township.
But $40,000 in those days had to be quite the sum of money.
It would have been. Actually, he ended up with 34 people signing this, and they raised $21,000, and he said, let's go.
Yeah.
And he felt that if they made that commitment, that the rest of them, of course, Sylvanus Ferris is an important figure, putting up, I don't know how much of the money. Some say most of it. Maybe, I don't know. But and I know getting the aid of Sylvanus Ferris was very important to the founding of, and then the Knox Manual Labor College became the first incorporation name of it, and they did have the farm here. The farming really didn't work out. It was rechartered then later as just Knox College, and their income from the sale of land to the railroad, of course, helped them a great deal. But I'm kind of getting ahead of the story. But that's, in a nutshell, what happened to the Manual Labor College idea.
But he brought his ideas to the prairie. In fact, before homes were built, they built Log City, right?
Yes,
to live around kind of the plot.
Right. One of the ideas of the founders was that we were going to have proper homes, you might say, not going to live in log cabins. Well, but they had to do something temporary, so they had sort of a temporary village out in the vicinity of Lake Story, and that was called Log City, and that's where they started settling in 1836, and more came in 1837. There were 232 people that are considered the founders of Galesburg, because those are the 2 years that they identify as the years that the founders would have come. So,
what influence did he have bringing that type of college here with his background, Rex? I mean, in terms of maybe other communities or other colleges, because he must have been teaching religion at Knox too, right? I mean, there would have been...
Yes,
or not.
It wasn't teaching theology, but he was teaching moral philosophy. I believe they called it, and ancient languages. And as far as out here in Illinois, you had Illinois College at Jacksonville that's just a little bit older.
Really?
Which is probably why this isn't Illinois College, but it's in Knox County, which is why it's Knox College. And there was encouragement from people in Knoxville. Knoxville was, of course, settled for the purpose of being the county seat. There had not been a town there before, and people from Knoxville did welcome them and help them. But there was nothing else out here that really close by that compares. This is the military tract between the Illinois River and the Mississippi River from Alton North to the north line of Mercer County, and there was no other college. This was it for this part of the military tract, Jacksonville. Of course, being a bit farther south. So, yes, it was an important influence. And unlike most early towns were settled on the basis of commerce. Many of them were river towns. And they would pick a place that would make a good port, a place where a dock area could be developed, and there would be land for expansion. And Peoria, for example, and Quincy, for example, Rock
rivers.
Island, on major waterways. And waterways, of course,
were... Well, didn't they even ship the supplies from New York to New Orleans and bring them up the river before they... and then get them at Oquaka before they came?
We were using... Oquaka was our river port town before it was our water supply. That's true. That was where we went in the early day. Chauncey Colton went to Oquaka to get supplies for his first store. He had shipped up from St. Louis, and they also used the inland waterways, through the Hudson, through the Erie Canal, the Great Lakes, and there was he could come to Chicago and then bring things overland by ox or by horse, or you could use the canal system in Ohio and go down to the Ohio River, and then the Ohio River down to the Mississippi, and then up the Illinois River, and there was a place called Copperas Creek Landing. It's over between Canton and Bartonville. Mm-hmm. And so that was the other route that they came, was Copperas Creek Landing. So Aquaca and Copperas Creek Landing.
Yeah. So let me take a break here, and when we come back, because we'll run out of time, right?
Sure.
So let's talk about the influences, though, that Gail had either on the community because of their views, because they brought their views, their
Absolutely.
Anti-slavery views into the community, because they were big abolitionists here, correct?
Yes. Well, Herman Milder, my professor at Knox, he used to say, they saw this frontier as an infant, and an infant needed to be raised, and they wanted to raise it properly. Mm. And that was a pretty good way of putting it. They were coming here to bring their values from the East, have an influence in the settlement. There's even the thought that they were racing against the Catholic influence of the Southwest, that they might start moving this way. And so there was a little bit of a battle that mm-hmm. way. Or a concern, let's put it that way, not truly a battle, but a concern. They wanted to be sure that they got here first and got their brand of religion settled here before anyone else.
It's 7:48 here on Galesburg Live. I'm Terry Cavanaugh. We're talking with local historian Rex Cherington this morning. Our discussion has centered around the Reverend George Washington Gale, who founded Knox College in the Galesburg community. Others were certainly involved, especially those who probably provided funding for such ventures when they came to the prairie. But he certainly wanted to have an influence here in the community, which Rex alluded to earlier, and that would be somewhat of a religious influence, or at least bringing their values from east to west, one of them being anti-slavery, among other things,
yes,
which was big, Rex.
That's right, Terry, it was. And, in the founding, and I was going to mention, too, about Knox College, that Reverend Gale never did really realize his ambition of a school for ministers, because for whatever reason, and I'll maybe give you an answer to that in a minute, but the young graduates, the early graduating classes from Knox College, were more inclined to go into education, law, or medicine, farming. And I think a lot of it just had to do with opportunities, because mm-hmm. the original founding party had a high proportion of ministers. So there weren't that many openings in a community of 400 people for more ministers.
They were going to have to leave.
They were going to have to leave, and a lot of them came with these families and wanted to stay here. So it didn't exactly turn out the way Reverend Gale wanted to. He never did get his divinity or theology school that he had hoped for at some point. It probably would have bothered him later if he had still been living to see his nemesis, the Universalist Church, establish Rider Divinity School in Galesburg on the other side of town. But in any case, Knox College then flourished as a liberal arts college that it is today. And, of course, we owe a great deal to Reverend Gale, even though it isn't exactly the way he envisioned it.
He still brought him to the prairie.
He established
the community.
I want to talk about the way that Knox College was funded initially. The Galesburg settlers went to the land office in Quincy and bought, 17 sections of land, mm-hmm. and a section is 640 acres. They bought it at the government price of $1.25 an acre, and they had pooled their money to do this. But then they sold it back to themselves at $5 an acre, so that the 80-acre tract that they bought for whatever that works out to, about $100, $120, then was sold back for $400. And that difference was the endowment for Knox Manual Labor College. That went into the endowment fund, plus the person who bought land also got a scholarship for one student for 1 year for each tract of, I think, 80 acres. I'm not sure on the number of acres, but there were scholarships granted with mm-hmm. when they bought the land back from the college.
So their $5 got them
the land
and the scholarship.
As Herman Milder pointed out to us, it was really not a hardship, because the land really would have gone up that much that quickly just by being settled. Mm-hmm. The $1.25 an acre would be land where there's nothing there. Once people are on it, the land always went up in value. So
Not to mention, once they started farming around here, they had to know that this land was pretty rich.
Well, that's kind of an interesting
story. Is it? Okay.
The first settlers actually liked the timber better than the prairies because you could drop the trees and use the trees to build
houses
and burn firewood, mm-hmm. and the soil was easier to work. They broke the prairie, you know, the name of the book. Well, the prairie soil was a bit intimidating. 6-foot-high prairie grasses in mm-hmm. some cases, deep, thick sod with a root system very, very far into the ground. And also in Galesburg, and we see this sometimes in wet weather, drainage here. Can you imagine before there was any field tiling or drainage work done? So that's why they were able to buy such a large tract of land. In the way a pioneer looked at things, you wanted to be near a flowing body of water. You wanted to have, if you could, a place where the water flowed fast enough it didn't freeze over in the winter, because that's the way you would have watered your mm-hmm. cattle. And you wanted, you know, you had open range then, so the cattle could freely wander in the prairie. You branded your cattle even mm-hmm. up to 1876 here in Knox County. So that was the reason that they bought it. It was, they had to work out the problems of field tiling and develop the steel plow that would break through the prairie grass sod and not get clogged. And
before we found all these beautiful fields that we have
now. What we see today took a lot of work. It took a lot of work to get them to where mm-hmm. What we see today is not the way they found them when they moved here.
No, I doubt it.
Uh-huh.
I'd have loved to seen what this looked like when they found it.
You read about the first surveying party in mm-hmm. 1818 that came through the area, and the men had to stand on the saddles of their horses to see over the prairie grass in order to see the target man as they did the first survey and laid out the quarter sections in this area.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So what else do we know about Gail's influence before we have to wrap up here this morning, Rex?
Well, Gail, I think we know that Gail had influence, of course. The battle between the Presbyterians and the Congregationalists probably limited what Gail could do. The Congregationalists were essential to the early survival of Knox College. As we know, Reverend Blanchard is quite a character, quite a rascal, but he was successful in bringing contributions to the college at a time when it was needed, and he actually had done a better job of bringing in the money than Reverend Gail mm-hmm. had from his Presbyterians, because Presbyterians were more loyal to Illinois College at Jacksonville. So overall, probably when Reverend Gail died, he probably felt somewhat unappreciated. In fact, he was one of the trustees at the college at the time who did not get a memorial resolution of a remembrance as would be customary. So his war with Blanchard, it cost them both dearly. Blanchard mm-hmm. had to resign and leave, and Gail was never enjoyed the position of
president of the college or something.
He was never president. That was one of the things he decided early on not to be the president of the college. Reverend Gail was the first one. Reverend Kellogg was the first president mm-hmm. of Knox College, replaced by Blanchard. Both of those men were Congregationalists, and that had to do with tension within the college. But I think that you know, really got the – but I have to say at least Gail got the ball rolling. That was his vision. And the fact that these other people subscribed to it, that mm-hmm. 232 people came out here and
made a go of it.
Yeah, put their fortunes with his.
Were they different than there existed a settlement in Knoxville at the time, right?
Knoxville was created for the purpose of being the county seat, and there were many New Yorkers who'd settled there. They were just not a colonizing movement per se. You had these people from the east, such as John G. Sanborn, Sanborn Store, who was an early county clerk. He was a New Yorker. James Knox and his brother Herman Knox, we know mm-hmm. about them. And in fact, James Knox and John G. Sanborn were early trustees of Knox College, and they came here separately. Gilbert was in the advance party for Knox College in Galesburg, came out here to buy the land, and he chose to live in Knoxville, and that's why there's a Gilbert Park mm-hmm. Over in Knoxville. So They got along pretty well right at first, and then Galesburg started, it was more of a sibling rivalry between the towns. It wasn't a culture clash like Calkins suggests. It's just that they started to compete. Galesburg was they were both competitive.
Yeah.
And they competed. And
eventually
Galesburg outmaneuvered them, and Springfield got the railroad moved out of the railroad that was going to go from Quincy to Knoxville ended up going from Quincy to Galesburg. And the railroad that was going to go from Knoxville north to the Rock Island Railroad was never built, and the rest is history.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, we appreciate the history of Rex Charrington here this morning on Galesburg Live. Always something to talk about, and we look forward to your next visit, Rex. But thanks for sharing a little bit of that early history about the Reverend Gale and the founding of Galesburg and Knox College, the two, of course, intertwined.
You're welcome, Terry. Thank you for asking me to come in.
And stay with us. We'll check news and weather details with Tyler Bachman next. We'll hear from Tom Meredith at the Doggy Jog, and we'll talk with Detective Todd Olinger of the Galesburg Police Department. We'll be talking about scams and how to prevent them this morning. Stay with us.